Welcome to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio, a show that explores the people, stories, and events in Central Iowa. I'm your host for today, Greta Anderson, together with my co-host, Ursula Rudenberg. And today, we continue the series, Clean Water Radio, with a look at hog confinements, past and present, and a look forward to August 19th, when the state's Environmental Protection Commission will hear final arguments by environmental groups to decide upon what rules they will subject animal confinement feeding operations to. As you may recall from previous shows, the federal EPA has stepped in and demanded that Iowa take this action, as it was found that our state policies were failing to maintain the standards of the Clean Water Act. We'll hear in particular about a hog confinement that was recently proposed in southern Boone County and the efforts of some citizens to talk the owners out of building it. Spoiler alert, they did not succeed. So, Ursula Rudenberg is here with me in the studio. Good morning, Ursula.
Good morning.
I've got a couple of jokes for you.
Okay.
How did the little pig win at Monopoly?
I don't know.
He put a hotel on Pork Place.
Okay.
How do you fit more pigs on your farm?
How do you fit more pigs on your farm?
You build a skyscraper.
Okay.
These are actually strategies the agricultural industry in Iowa have not yet used to increase the density of hogs. But here's a fact that's no joke at all. In a typical confinement situation, each hog will have a space that is only roughly 2 feet by 3 feet to live in.
So that's just basically the size of one pig.
And that's how much room they have to live in, like living in an airplane. We're going to start the show by taking a quick look back at the beginning of CAFOs. Last week, I was talking to Paul Nelson, one of our station's engineers, about the topic of this show, and he said, "You must talk to my friend, Ann Pellegrino." Ann, as it turns out, is an aviator who, in 1967, on the 30th anniversary of Amelia Earhart's last flight, replicated that flight in all details but one. She placed a wreath on the island near where Earhart's plane was believed to go down.
Wow. That's dedication.
And Ann is still alive and flying her planes out of Texas. That would be her biggest claim to fame. You can find her on the internet. But Ann became an Iowan 2 years after her historic flight in 1969. She and her husband moved to rural Story County, just north of Story City. And here she tells the story.
We had moved to Iowa in 1969 and bought a farm up by Story City, put in a wonderful grass runway with lights. And by 1994, we had a heated hangar for our airplanes. Our house had been remodeled. We were intending to stay there forever. And then in April of that year, we found out that they were going to put a hog factory just a half a mile or so north of us across the county line. The county north of us was much more lenient.
That would be Hamilton County?
Yes. And we fought that. We had a group together and gathered information and had a big meeting in Story City, which filled the hall there. We had slides, people who had had it happen to them up north. And our group decided to fight it because these were our homes, and most of the families had been there for a long time. And so our group got together and managed to defeat the placement of this hog factory so close to all of us right around there. But there was another larger one going up 2¾ miles northwest of us, which affected another group of our rural friends. And we fought that one, too. We were not told the whole truth. I was told, and in my research somewhere I have the date, by someone that it would not affect us. We were too far away. Well, they were wrong. That odor and the flies from that confinement, and especially to the people who lived right north of it, it was 15,000 hogs in 10 buildings and 12 acres of open sewerage. Now, we had hog farmers on three sides of us, to the north, to the east, and to the south. Our farmer friends were raising hogs as they used to, in buildings, the hogs outside, happy hogs, in other words, not confined hogs. It did not bother us in any way. And so this was a big shock to the whole community, because in our group, some of the people who were dependent on their hogs for a living were put out of business because of the factory-type style of raising hogs and their efficiency, quote-unquote, and they had to get out of hog farming. It was just not profitable for them. They could not deliver manicured hogs exact weight, exact time, basically. So we gathered a group together of 35 people in the area, and we had an attorney, and we fought them.
Was this after they had already gone in?
Yes, this was. They were operating. They had well started by mid-April 1994, and it was very, very upsetting for people who had lived in the area for years to have this stench and the flies drift over their home places. We were helpless. I mean, really helpless. And we couldn't really fight back, because legally they could do what they could because of the bill that was passed in the Iowa House and Senate. So we were at a big disadvantage. We fought them down to final arbitration, and final arbitration meant that the people living the closest, of course, got the most, but it can never compensate for losing the freedom to enjoy your home and environs. Never, ever. Now, they did try to do some things, planting trees and things like this, and experimenting with what they were fed and all this kind of stuff, but it never compensated all the ones in our area who were really, really affected by it. Some people to this day close by use bottled water. You just don't know. And so we decided to leave, too, because we couldn't even have fly-ins and schedule them, because if the wind was from the northwest, here came the stench. The wind from the northwest for the first years we were there was wonderful. It was spring fresh. It was after the front had gone through, and we truly enjoyed it. But then we grew to hate the northwest wind, because that's where the odor and stench came from. And when we would land at night, our propeller leading edges would be covered with blood from flies, and they never had happened before. And if the stench was out, you couldn't sit outside. We had to put air conditioning in 1995, because in the summer we could not open the windows all the time. And it was that way for many of the families around. They were affected by this hog confinement. And our group of farmers did water tests. We did wind testing. And we got to the final arbitration table. Everybody got something. I don't know all the exact settlements. But in our case, it was very, very little compared to what we were having to give up. Our little airport, our place on this earth where our airplanes could be happy, and we could be happy, and our friends could be happy when they flew in and visited us. Basically, what we got was enough to pay the court costs that everybody owed, pay the attorney what he was owed, and then to install the air conditioning in our farm home. That was it. And we left. We still think about our farm. We think about our friends. And that will always be a very dear part of our heart, living there in Story City. And we never would have left had not they put those 15,000 hogs 2¾ miles northwest of us. It was a wrenching thing to leave our home, where we had lived for 25 years, basically, because we, and I think other farm families, too, all over the state, were either forced to live with stench and flies and other things pertaining to the hog confinement, fan noise from the buildings. There was no real consideration for our homes that we had built. It was just get the factory in, get the money flowing, and so forth. Now, people need to make money, I agree, but I don't think they have to ruin the lives of people when they go in to make this money.
That was Ann Pellegrino of Texas, and this is Clean Water Radio on Local Talk. I'm Greta Anderson here with Ursula Rudenberg. And Ursula, the early 1990s, which is when these events Ann described happened, is when confinements began to appear everywhere and the debate over them first became really heated. The bill that Ann refers to was signed into law by then-Governor Branstad in 1995, and that was the one that took all siting decisions out of the hands of county supervisors. More importantly, for Ann's sake, That law also protected all agricultural entities from nuisance lawsuits.
A nuisance lawsuit would be one that sues someone for creating a nuisance, like flies or stench, the way she described it.
Right, right. And about the stench, I mean, she mentioned that she lived surrounded by hog farmers and hadn't been bothered by it. That's not just a sentimental view of things. The manure in a traditional setting is deposited on the ground. It's exposed to air. And so the bacteria that live in the manure are aerobically digesting bacteria, whereas when the manure is deposited in a pit, liquid piles on top of liquid, and so oxygen can't get in there. It is the anaerobic bacteria that thrive in that environment, and they produce different chemicals. So hydrogen sulfide is one, it's H2S. There's no O in that equation, and that is one of the big stinkers in hog confinement manure. So evidently, Anne and her neighbors were fighting this lawsuit at the very time that the law saying nuisance lawsuits were off the table was being passed. And from what I understand, they got the settlement only because of the very, very bad behavior of the people on the corporate side. She did not even want to talk about what happened. She's writing a memoir about it. She was afraid that if she spoke about it on the air, she might be sued here, you know, 20 years later.
It's really too bad Central Iowa lost somebody like that.
Yes. And as she mentioned, Story County lost a lot of hog farmers. I did a little research. And in 1945, the Census of Agriculture reported about 170,000 farms in Iowa raising hogs. And then by 1997, the number was down to 17,000 rather than 170,000 farms raising pigs.
Yeah, our generation often talks about growing up on a farm or going to their grandparents' farm, but there's not going to be that much connection for the next generations.
Well, it's interesting that you mention that, because our next story comes from a Century Farm down near Woodward in southern Boone County. The Danielson Farm has a few cattle and a beautiful 5-acre pond where the family's grandkids come and fish and boat. In this area of Boone County, close to the Des Moines River, is very, very scenic. It's where Ledges State Park is, the High mm-hmm. Trestle Trail Bridge, and so on. This farm is 3/4 of a mile from a CAFO that is being built by someone who doesn't live there. Here's my conversation with Jan Danielson. I'm here with Jan Danielson of Woodward, Iowa. On my way out to your house today, I saw a whole lot of signs saying family farms, yes, factory farms, no.
Yes, we have asked neighbors, and we've put up signs in our yard because of our concern of the CAFOs that are being built.
When did you first find out about the CAFO that is going in next door to you?
About the first part of June, county road crews were going by and they were widening driveways in a farm field that's 3/4 of a mile from us. And that drew my attention and neighbors' attention to something is going on. So I went to the county courthouse to research it and found out they were going to build a hog factory farm there.
And who is they?
This is the Brelsford family, Brody Brelsford. Is the person that's putting up the hog confinement. And then Brent Rastetter from Quality Ag is the one that's putting up the building for Brody. Brody Brelsford lives over by Perry. He doesn't live in this area. He leases the farmland, and that's where he's going to put the hog confinement, on leased land.
How many hogs are we talking about?
2,480, according to the manure management plan and the application that he filled out at the Boone County Courthouse.
That's a very specific number and a significant one as well, right?
If there had been 2,500 head of pigs there, they would have had to fill out a matrix by the county, go before the Board of Supervisors for approval, and at 2,480, they do not have to do that. So no one was notified.
Okay, and your concerns obviously being neighbors, the smell?
The smell will definitely be there. We have a larger CAFO just south of us, a half a mile. And smell, the flies, the constant worry about water quality, what's going to happen through runoff, how that's going to affect the water, the soil around here. Another place that they're planning on putting manure is across from the Boy Scout camp.
Camp Matigua.
And we're concerned about that. They're concerned about that. You'll notice they have a sign in their yard also. We're worried about that. One of the other places across from Bethel Church. These are areas that are a huge concern. The runoff from this can affect that water and then will lead to Des Moines River, which is within 2 miles from there too. So you'll get smell when they apply the manure. You'll get smell when they're working with the hogs, and flies are an issue.
Do you have any recourse at this point?
Well, when we first found out, I notified all the neighbors around here. Nobody knew about it, and told them, especially the closest ones. I also talked to ICCI in Des Moines and asked them about, do you have petitions or anything that I could have people sign? So we contacted people. We've got definitely over 100 signatures of people who are angry and did not want that placed here. I tried to call Mr. Brelsford several times, and finally he did call me. His final statement was, you know, what he's doing is legal, and he has a right to do it. And my statement to him was, it might be legal, but it's not a moral thing and not something that good neighbors do. So our next steps are to work as a group to see what we can do, not only to change the laws, but in order to force maybe some more soul-searching from the families and letting them see that what they're doing is affecting our quality of life and the neighbors' quality of life in a tremendous way, and yet they don't live here and don't seem to care about what's happening.
But from what I understand, the cement trucks are already going by pouring that foundation for that building.
Well, actually, by this time, the building is pretty much up. They don't have hogs yet. They don't have a water source that I know of. But they've continued to build. I'm afraid, not only with this one, on how that's going to affect us, but what's going to stop this family and other families from putting more CAFOs of this size anywhere they want to.
What about the owner of the land, the person who leased the land?
The land belongs to a lady named Cheryl York, and she's living in a nursing home facility in Perry. Her son got power of attorney. As far as I can tell from paperwork that I've read, in May, and right away in May, the son leased the land to the Brelsfords. A 99-year lease, which unfortunately is not a good choice. He finally did call me. I had tried to reach him too. And one of the statements he said was, well, you already have one CAFO. What difference does it make to put another one up? Which to me just shows the ignorance in understanding the whole issue.
Some, you know, proponents of these large confinement operations have sometimes characterized the opposition to them as bullies or activists, but I understand that you've had some disturbing encounters with the other side.
We have. At the time that they were pouring cement for the manure facility, the concrete pit, we had lots of cement trucks going down our road. And it's a gravel road that the county sort of redesigned. They've made it narrower. They're working on it to help with snow. And so they were trying to maintain it to a certain level. The cement trucks going by were going both directions constantly for a couple of days, and we noticed that the road was starting to have some big problems with it. My husband went out. He was just driving his truck in front of the house and was going to go check cattle and see how things were going on our farm, and two cement trucks stopped. One of the drivers started to get out of the truck to talk to my husband or yell at him, actually, about you can't stop on the road, you can't be driving slow, we need to get by. And my husband said that he was disappointed in what they were doing, that they were doing the wrong thing on coming on the road and helping to build this. At that point, cement truck drivers went on, and a little bit later in the day we had the Boone County Deputy Sheriff come, and evidently the cement truck people had called the police and said that my husband was trying to stop them from going down the road, which was not true. We had another instance of vandalism. We've put up small yard signs up and down roads, and then we purchased a very large sign, and we have it placed on a neighbor's land across from the CAFO site. Just a couple of weeks ago, as we went out there, it had been spray painted. We also had destroyed another neighbor's yard sign that was down the road the same day. So we did call the sheriff in and report, not us, but a neighbor, on vandalism to our signs. Signs are expensive. And now we've replaced it, and hopefully it'll stay okay.
So you got restitution?
No, we replaced it with our own money.
How do you feel about this? I mean, this has been going on for, this has been probably a big part of your life now for 6 weeks, 2 months. How do you feel?
First of all, I felt extremely angry. You get angry that someone does this to you and has the attitude that I can do it because I want to do it, not taking into account how others feel about it or what you're doing to the environment. To me, when I see people putting these up, I say, that's not being a farmer. That's running a factory and producing a product. And they're getting by with agricultural rules rather than factory rules. And so it makes me angry that they can do this. And then after you feel angry, you feel determined to see what you can do about it. It is consuming. It consumes your time. I have met so many people now that are working against this. I'm hoping that together we can start to make a statement and not be seen as activists, but more so as people who are concerned about our earth. I mean, you only get one shot, and if you blow it like this, then we're not doing anything for our grandchildren. And this, you know, this farm, this Century Farm, is our legacy. This is it for our family and our grandchildren. So we want to keep it as nice as we can.
There's a hearing coming up later in the month about possibly changing the rules on CAFOs.
Well, last time I went to the meeting last month, and yes, I'm planning on going to this meeting and having a chance to talk, if they'll allow that, during the open session. Sometimes it feels as if you are talking to the wall instead of people who are concerned with the environment. It bothers me that Brent Rastetter, the owner of Quality Ag, is sitting on that Environmental Protection Commission. There is definitely a conflict of interest. And last time that I went, we talked about he needs to withdraw from that commission when they're talking about, especially when they're talking about water quality and the Clean Water Act and what needs to be changed. So yes, I plan on being there and possibly talking if I can get on the agenda.
Well, thank you very much for your time, Jan.
I'm glad I have a chance to talk about it, so thanks for coming.
You're listening to Clean Water Radio, a special Friday series of local talk on KHOI Community Radio. That was Jan Danielson, who lives with her husband on a Century Farm near Woodward, Iowa.
Greta, Jan mentioned going to meetings. What were those meetings about?
She was referring to the regular public meetings of the Environmental Protection Commission. This is a board of 9 citizens appointed by the governor who oversee the Iowa DNR. I mentioned that Iowa is going to take a look at changing its CAFO rules soon, and that would be done by this commission, the EPC.
You mentioned that Iowa had to change its rules because the federal EPA came in and said it wasn't doing enough to follow the Clean Water Act.
Right. Well, agricultural production has always been considered a non-point source of pollution. The Clean Water Act was very good at regulating point sources like your industrial plants, sewage treatment plants, and so forth. But there is now a case to be made that CAFOs, confinement feeding operations, qualify as point sources, that they are, in fact, industry and not agriculture.
It sounded like Jan Danielson did not feel that the EPC really wanted to listen to her when she spoke at the meetings.
Well, we have to realize these are political appointees. The people that Branstad appointed are all from the confinement industry. Or, like Brent Rastetter, they make money off of building confinements. You'll recall that Brent is building the very building that's 3/4 of a mile down the road from Jan. And so there's cronyism involved, plain and simple. The organization Iowa Progress reported back in May that the Rastetter brothers, Brent and Bruce, have donated $250,000 to Branstad's reelection campaigns back in 2010 and then this year. They are, in fact, the largest donors to the Branstad campaigns.
Were you able to reach the farmer? His name is Brody Brelsford?
Yeah.
Were you able to reach him for comment?
I tried, but as you heard Jan say, he is not returning many phone calls these days. Let's take a musical break while we process all of this hog manure.
Living in the wasteland of the free. We got preachers dealing in politics and diamond mines. And their speech is growing increasingly unkind. And they say they are Christ's disciples. They don't look like Jesus to me. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got politicians running races on corporate cash. Now don't tell me they don't turn around and kiss them people's ass. You may call me old-fashioned, that don't fit my picture of a true democracy. It feels like I am living in the wasteland of the free. We got CEOs making 200 times the workers' pay. They'll fight like hell against raising the minimum wage. If you don't like it, mister, they'll ship your job to some third world country across the sea. And it feels like I am living in the wasteland.
You're listening to Clean Water Radio on Local Talk. I'm here with Ursula Rudenberg, and we've been talking about a CAFO going up in southern Boone County. We've talked about nuisances and bullies, Ursula, but we haven't talked much about water. And I wanted to remedy that with my next interview. This one is with a woman who developed the protocol for volunteer water testing of the Iowa DNR. Her name is Danielle Wirth. Danielle, it just so happens, lives on the Des Moines River watershed, and it was she who drew our attention to this story. So here's Danielle.
I have been a federal park ranger at Sailorville. I've worked for the DNR in the past. I am an environmental educator, but I am also a citizen of this bioregion. So I am on edge, I am affected, and I am challenging the very siting of this facility and also the way it was sited.
Okay, well, let's talk in detail about the nearby structures and communities, biological and human, that will be affected. Danielle's provided me a map that shows the watershed in detail. And the CAFO is proposed for a section that is, it looks to be about 3 miles due west of the High Trestle Trail.
Yes, maybe even a little closer.
Of course, there are also fields that will be affected by the manure management plan. And those fields include fields pretty much across from the Boy Scout.
Yes, Camp Matigua, a destination for many scouts throughout the eastern and central Iowa area. That will affect the quality of the outdoor experience for the boys because of the way water flows in this watershed. It is what's called linked depressions. So anything that infiltrates into the ground, anything that will move vertically, will also move laterally. So when there is a rain event, and last month there was a 3.1-inch rain event in a matter of a few hours on this watershed, water will move downhill. It will carry material that was applied to the fields. It will put it in 3 creeks that have high water quality. That material will then move towards the Boy Scout camp. They have several freshwater ponds where they engage in recreational activities like swimming, water sports, and kayaking. Those ponds will be affected. The Boy Scout camp has 3 groundwater wells. They get all their drinking water from those wells. They are not on rural water. That will be affected.
There's another entity that will be affected, the Pleasant Hill Cemetery in the Bethel Church.
Yes, the historic Bethel Church. Not a large congregation, but what does this say about the siting procedures of the Department of Natural Resources? When you sit in an office and you look at lines on the paper and you have not done ground truthing in this area where you don't know the community, my argument is the laws are inadequate to protect the ecological integrity, the local human communities that live in these areas. I know what it's like to look at the paperwork. I can look at engineering diagrams. And if it fits those standards, you have to sign off on it because the law is flawed. So I'm not criticizing the field people. They don't have much of a choice. There's an engineering company that made the claim that there are no waterways that will be affected by this project. There are no critical wetlands. Well, excuse me, I have done biological, chemical sampling on 2 of those 3 creeks in the area. And there are some amazing things happening. That water quality is high. On Cat and Branch, for example, we seined aquatic life. We found a 4-inch northern pike fry. Who would have thought? But they're reproducing in that watershed. They will be affected. They need high oxygen levels. When you have high level of nutrients added to water, the oxygen level goes down.
Can you name those creeks again that
Sure.
are being affected?
Just north of the High Trestle Trail is Preston Creek. Preston will not be affected. The next northern creek is Cat and Branch. Moving north, Eversol Creek, that flows right through the property in question, where the CAFO will be. Above Eversol Creek is Bear Creek. They all flow into the Des Moines River. So any impact in those creeks will enter the Des Moines River. Madrid is the first intake, then the city of Ankeny, with their brand new drinking water facility owned and managed by the Des Moines Water Works, and then Des Moines itself. They will have to treat that water. The Des Moines Water Works treatment processes are second to none. There are many redundancies in those processes. So the water, of course, when it comes out of the tap, it will be safe. But getting there will cost more money. The wildlife who use that river will not have a choice to have treated water. The children who swim, the boaters who will be fishing, the people who will be water skiing in that water will not have a choice as to whether or not those contaminants are in there. I think the law has to be changed. I think if more people knew about it, knew about how Iowa was being horrifically impacted by these procedures, the law would change. The law has to change. We regulate municipal wastewater treatment facilities stringently. I see little difference between treating the way we treat human waste products and the way we ought to be treating hog waste. It's an industrial process. They ought to have in place what the Des Moines Wastewater Reclamation Facility is doing. I found out about this little project because I got a bright green postcard in the mail, and I get them frequently from Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement. And I read it, as I do read their publications, and I was ready to express sympathy. And then I saw that this is going to happen in Woodward. So, of course, I will go to the meeting and join with others. And there are people from all political stripes. Republicans, Democrats, Libertarians, people who don't vote or who haven't voted in the past. Believe me, they are thinking of voting right now in this election. And that's the other thing I'm encouraging people to do is get in the face of your legislator. Ask them where they stand. And if you have our back, then how are you going to work with having local control? How are you in the Iowa House and Senate going to strengthen the water quality laws in the state of Iowa? Because right now, you're doing nothing. As a collective body, there are a few of you who have a conscience, but most of you are doing nothing. You showing up and being present and participating in a democracy is what it's going to take.
How far do you live from this facility?
Well, I'm not going to be affected by the air. But I might see some of the effluent go under the High Trestle Trail Bridge that my husband and I worked very hard to make happen, up to and including donating money and walking on that site before it was just on in the early stages of being envisioned as a pedestrian and bike trail. So I have a lot riding on this. I sample two of those three creeks that I've mentioned. I was the person who set up the initial protocols for a demonstration system that in 1998 became the Iowa Water Program, which at that point in time the DNR really did not want but were encouraged to take because there was so much citizen enthusiasm for that.
This was a volunteer water sampling project?
Yes. The Iowa Environmental Council got federal funding, hired me to set up three demonstration projects around Iowa to see if people were interested. And oh my, yes, they were interested. It has grown to include hundreds of monitors. That was the concern that the Iowa legislature as a group and the governor's office expressed in 1998 to the Iowa Environmental Council that we don't want a group of vigilantes running around the state of Iowa. Well, guess what? People care about their water. Farmers, the family farmers I know, care about their water. I encourage anyone who enjoys being outdoors, take the Iowa Water Training. It's magnificent. The DNR people who are involved in that program, how wonderfully capable and intelligent they are, what great teachers they are, how marvelously they involved children in teaching children about the aquatic macroinvertebrates, the really cool bugs that are in the water, the dragonfly nymphs and larvae, stoneflies. It's really fun. Wear some sandals, get out there and see what's in your creeks and streams.
Interesting. That can be a whole family activity then.
Absolutely.
What is that website?
They can Google www.iowater. Iowa Water, a contraction of Iowa Water.
Okay. Well, Danielle, thank you so much.
It's been my pleasure to talk with you today.
That was Danielle Wirth of Woodward, Iowa. I'm Greta Anderson, and this is Clean Water Radio on KHOI Community Radio, a special Friday series of local talk. When this show is posted online, we will have a link to that website if folks want to get involved with volunteer water testing.
We've been talking about a hog confinement lot that just went up in southern Boone County near the Boy Scout camp there.
Yes, Camp Mategua is directly opposite one of the fields where the manure will be spread. And I can tell you from driving that road that, yes, it is all downhill from that field to the camp and the river.
This comes back to local control, or rather the lack of local control authorities have over such issues.
Yes, we heard Danielle saying what many people are saying. It's Iowa's laws that need to be changed, and environmental advocates are focusing their attention on this August 19th meeting with Environmental Protection Commission as the first step.
What specifically are these groups asking the EPC for?
Well, we are going to take the rest of the show to answer that question. We have on the line a lawyer from the Environmental Integrity Project in Washington, D.C. This organization has been helping Iowa organizations like the Iowa Sierra Club and Iowa Citizens for Community Improvement argue their case to the EPA and the EPC, and it helps groups in other states, so it has some perspective on the larger picture. Tara, are you there?
I am. Good morning.
Tara Heinzen, you are a lawyer, and it appears that you drafted the official letter to the EPC environmental organizations across the state have signed on to. And could you boil down the content of this letter for our listeners? What are you advocating in terms of CAFO permits in Iowa?
Sure. Well, this letter was a public comment submitted during the public comment period, and it was one of many public comments submitted. Iowa CCI and Sierra Club members submitted, I think, more than 5,000 individual comments. But this letter really summarized some of the big picture issues and got into the details of why these rules need to be strengthened. First, these rules proposed by the DNR essentially just copy and paste the Federal Environmental Protection Agency's CAFO regulations. This is a major improvement for Iowa because the state has lagged behind in updating its own rules for several years. But we're concerned that the proposal won't lead to the permitting needed for real water quality improvement in Iowa's rivers and streams. I'll just mention a couple of the most important points. First, the proposed rules before the EPC will require a hog confinement or another confinement operation to seek a water pollution permit if it discharges to a waterway of the state. However, the DNR has not clarified exactly when it will consider a facility a discharger. This might seem like a simple question, but it's actually a very critical point because for decades, the state has treated manure spills, no matter how catastrophic, as one-time events that don't actually require a Clean Water Act permit. The assumption DNR has made is that a violation that happens once won't happen again. But the burden really needs to be on the CAFO operator to get a permit after an illegal discharge. And we've advocated for DNR to go further yet and make a finding that the state's largest CAFOs do discharge, even if they haven't had a documented manure spill, and that they need a permit. DNR has decades of water pollution data to support a determination like this, and we think they should make one. Currently, the DNR proposed a rule that it looks pretty good on paper, but it won't likely lead to very many permits actually being issued to thousands of hog confinements in Iowa. Second, even for those facilities that might get permits, the proposed rules aren't adequate to meet the federal EPA's requirements to minimize the pollution runoff from a facility, both the production area with all the livestock and the waste, and also the land application fields where they spread the manure, even when the permits are issued. DNR has the authority to establish the standards for how manure has to be managed and applied, and these standards are supposed to prevent pollution from all of these sources. But the proposed rules allow spreading on slopes, spreading on frozen ground, and other practices that the commenters don't think are adequate to protect water quality.
Hmm. That's quite something. I had always heard that they had to work the manure into the soil, but according to the Iowa DNR, it's okay to apply on frozen ground.
Not under all circumstances, but there's no blanket prohibition on the practice, and that just seems like an absolute common sense thing to put in place. So we've asked DNR to consider such a prohibition, but in this current rulemaking, instead of updating those technical standards for manure management, all they're really doing is copying and pasting the federal rules. We'd like them to go beyond that and do a little bit more to make sure that permits issued are actually protective.
And a permit, presumably to get a permit, they would have to demonstrate some greater degree of preparedness for spills or defenses against spills?
Right. Well, so Clean Water Act permits under the federal regulations essentially require an operation to have a certain amount of waste storage, typically 180 days worth of storage, to prevent lagoon overflows and things like that. They also have to do routine inspections of the production area to make sure that their equipment isn't malfunctioning, that there are no leaks, that everything's working smoothly. They have to make sure that stormwater, like rain, running off of the buildings and other sources in the production area doesn't mix with polluted water or manure and then cause runoff of polluted water. And then they have to implement what's called a nutrient management plan. And that's what actually controls how much waste you can apply and how that has to be done. So the incorporation into the soil, setback distances between the actual application and waterways, and things like that.
So all of these routine inspections are not being done currently?
Well, it's a provision of the federal regulations that certain things have to be inspected on a weekly or daily basis. And in Iowa, there are manure management plan requirements that are similar but not identical to the nutrient management planning requirements at the federal level. So some of these same protections are in place for facilities with these manure management plans, and those are facilities with more than 1,250 hogs, for example. But not all of the same requirements are in place. And one of the most important things about having a Clean Water Act permit, in addition to the stronger requirements of the nutrient management plan, is the transparency that it brings and the public participation. So when a federal Clean Water Act permit is issued, the public has a right to comment on that permit and get involved in the process, and then that permit is a public document. So it really makes the process more transparent and allows citizens to get involved and learn more about what types of polluters are in their watershed and might be impacting them.
That does sound very important. As a national organization, you work with people in many different states. Can you give us a sense of what measures exist in other states that might be more stringent than those in Iowa?
Sure. I'll stick to the Midwest primarily just because it's, I think, the most telling in contrast with Iowa. I will say none of the states that I work in does a fantastic job at preventing pollution from CAFOs, but a lot of states are ahead of Iowa when it comes to their regulatory program and actually issuing permits. For example, both Wisconsin and Michigan require all large CAFOs to have these Clean Water Act discharge permits. This has increased transparency across the board and required hundreds of facilities in each state to follow these more protective measures that come with a Clean Water Act permit, such as requiring setbacks between manure application areas and streams. Another interesting example is North Carolina, which is a cautionary tale. In North Carolina, there are about half the hogs that there are in Iowa, and the state in, I think, 1997 imposed a moratorium on new manure lagoon construction for hog confinements because of the severe water pollution that they experienced from the industry.
Wow.
They've now made that moratorium permanent, and to build a new hog confinement or expand, you have to follow much more stringent construction requirements. But some have said that that only spurred growth in other sectors in the state, and they've seen a huge boom in poultry facility construction.
Are there any laws on Iowa's books that make it particularly hard for progress to be made in terms of cleaning up our ag industry? We heard Danielle talk about contacting our legislators. Are there laws to be changed?
Well, the one law that's most relevant to this EPC rulemaking on the 19th is a law passed in 2010 that actually prohibits the DNR from issuing CAFO discharge permits more protective than the bare minimum required by the federal EPA. And this means that the rules that are the absolute bare minimum requirements are also the best Iowa is allowed to do. So it's a pretty sad state of affairs when the legislature is so beholden to the livestock industry that it prohibits its environmental agency from taking action to protect water quality. Reversing this statutory provision is a very important step if Iowa ever wants to do more to protect factory farm pollution.
Tara, I'm Ursula Rudenberg. I'm Greta's co-host, and I just wanted to comment that I love the name of your organization, Environmental Integrity Project, and I'm assuming that even though your focus is on the legal aspect, you'll be able to talk about the concept of environmental integrity. So what in your mind are the greatest threats to the integrity of our environment that the manure of these facilities pose?
That's a really good question, and I think it goes to the very broad impacts from this industry. One of EIP's core missions is to help communities obtain the protection of environmental laws. The integrity of the Clean Water Act, the Clean Air Act, and other foundational environmental statutes that have been in place since the 1970s is compromised whenever an industry is allowed to evade the law's requirements and burden communities, such as the rural communities that I work with in Iowa, and the environment with polluted water and air. Factory farms have such widespread impacts. They hit rural communities the hardest, but they really do impact everyone, and it's not even limited just to the impacts of the manure that they produce. I think this industry model really has undermined the integrity of our entire food system. Consumers pay a large price for the cheap food at the grocery store, but the industry works very hard to operate behind closed doors, and it makes it really hard for people to vote with their food dollars. This industry brings water pollution, they contaminate drinking water sources, all of this pollution flows downstream. They emit air pollution that really harms quality of life and public health in rural communities.
Mm-hmm.
Antibiotic resistance is a huge threat to public health on a global scale and one that is exacerbated by this industry's practices. There are food safety threats from the industrial processing and the centralized production of massive quantities of livestock and the antibiotic-resistant bacteria found on CAFO meat. And, of course, animal welfare is a huge concern with this industrial model. So, again, I think we all pay a very heavy price for this cheap food, and it's just a food system that lacks integrity and really separates people from where their food is coming from and makes it very difficult to hold this industry accountable.
Tara Heinzen, thank you very much for coming onto the show and talking with us.
Yeah, thank you. Thanks for coming on.
Thank you.
We are running out of time here. I do want to just tell our listeners that there's been a lot of talk in the news about this blue-green algae toxin, the microcystin, and we will be producing a show about that issue coming up. I will say that Mary Skopek of the Iowa DNR, who maintains the Iowa DNR hotline about lake quality, did say that 11 cases already of the same toxin that was found in Toledo's water is present in Iowa, is present. They have issued advisories about using lakes on 11 occasions because they found very high levels of that toxin. So we'll be reporting about that in a couple weeks. You've been listening to Local Talk on KHOI Community Radio. This show has been part of our special Friday series, Clean Water Radio, where we explore issues that face our most precious resource in this state. We started out with an interview of Ann Pellegrino, who moved from Iowa to Texas back in the mid-1990s when a 15,000-head hog confinement moved to her neighborhood.
Then we heard from two Boone County residents, Jan Danielson and Danielle Worth, who are unhappy with the siting of a new hog CAFO close to the precious water resources that are tied to the Des Moines River.
And finally, we spoke with Tara Heinzen of the Environmental Integrity Project of Washington, D.C. That organization has helped Iowa's environmental organizations draft an official letter to the commission that will determine how CAFOs operate within the Clean Water Act.
This program and links to the resources mentioned on the show will be available on our website, khoifm.org. That's khoifm.org, later in the day.
We've been your hosts, Greta Anderson and Ursula Rudenberg. Becca Brown engineered the show. Our theme song is Backtrackin' by Al Harris and Tom Richards from their CD, The Ballad of Kate Shelley. We also played a song by the Iowa City singer-songwriter Iris Dement.
Local Talk is a radio production workshop as well as a show. Visit our website and send us feedback or come by to the station and get involved and join the production team.
As always, your participation as listener is what makes KHOI possible. Thanks for listening, and see you again on the radio.
All of us at KHOI would like you to know that no waterways were degraded in the production of today's show. KHOI cares.